most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Wednesday afternoon with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got a lot coming your way. Normally, Wednesday is the day that we talk a lot about the National Football League as we chime in with it. We get Mike Keith to join us as well as John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John will be on with us, but it won't be at his normal time. In fact, moving forward, we're going to have to rearrange that normal time. Mike Keith is traveling today with the Titans as they play tomorrow night in Jacksonville. So Mike will join us for one segment tomorrow at 4:05. As the Titans look to get back in the win column, they play at Jacksonville. Jaguars looking for that first win. So John McClain, 4:05 today. And Jimmy, we will talk a lot about Tennessee football, as well as have comments from a number of those with the Volunteers, and we'll even hear from the opposing head coach before all is said and done today.
Yeah, we sure will. And then I don't know how many folks had a chance to read Chris Lowe's story about the 2009 season with Lane Kiffin, Ed Orgeron, all the chaos, the ups and downs. It was just a bizarre year. Really good story by Chris Lowe. Talked to a number of people about it. I knew some of the things in here, but there were some things in here I did not know. But and then Lane Kiffin once again denying he made a comment that Alshon Jeffrey, if he didn't go to Tennessee, would be pumping gas. And Kiffin said, I didn't say it, but they were on a speakerphone. So apparently somebody on the coaching staff at Tennessee said it. Kiffin just said it wasn't him. It's a good read. We'll visit with Chris Lowe at 5:35 to talk with him about that article. So,
yeah, that'll be at 5:35, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we'll look forward to that, and so many memories from that point in time, and what a point in time it was.
We'll go ahead and get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters Office Technology. You need people you can trust. Jeremy Pruitt on the SEC teleconference earlier today, we had a chance to ask him a few questions. One was, is it the intent to not play cornerback Bryce Thompson until his court date September 23rd? Pruitt said that Thompson has practiced the last 2 weeks, and if he stays on the right path, we will make that decision when the time comes. So, did not give any indication whether Thompson would play against Florida. Also asked Pruitt if five-star offensive lineman Darnell Wright is better suited for guard versus tackle. Pruitt said Wright could play both guard and tackle, but is playing guard because that gives Tennessee the best opportunity to have success with the current personnel. Right now, Caron Calvert is at right tackle. Jameer Johnson did not play last week against Chattanooga. When he returns, I think there's a good chance he'll be at right tackle. Wright will be at right guard, and Calvert would be a backup. Also, Pruitt said that Florida's got really good edge rushers. And so the best way to combat that, a good run game, throwing screen passes, the quarterback getting rid of the ball quickly, mixing pass protections, not getting into third and long. If I were to add one other thing, I would say your receivers beating press coverage, because that allows your quarterback to throw it quickly and on target and timing route. So that would be another part. Pruitt also said the score could dictate that situation as well. All right, a few other notes out there. So Notre Dame's taking on Georgia this weekend between the hedges. In Notre Dame's last 19 games against top five teams in the AP poll, Notre Dame's won exactly one. 1-18 in the last 19 games against the top five.
Wow.
In the AP poll. They've lost 10 in a row. And then it was pointed out that Notre Dame hadn't been relevant since they won the national championship in 1988. I'm going to differ from that. I guess maybe others have whatever their definition is of relevant. If you're in the college football playoff, weren't you relevant? Okay, you got beat.
Yes.
But if you got that far, aren't you relevant?
I would think so.
Your top five team. So there have been a number of years Notre Dame has been relevant. No, they have not won many games against the top five, but I don't know. It's kind of like when I hear people say, well, Tennessee hadn't been any good since 1998. No. In 2001, they came one win away from playing for the national championship. In 2004, they won the East and played for the SEC title against Auburn, lost 38-28, and if not for a couple of holes on 80-yard touchdown runs, maybe Tennessee upsets Auburn. 2007, Tennessee has the lead in the fourth quarter against LSU before there was a pick six. So those are pretty good football teams. So I guess I have a little more leeway in my definition of relevant. Michigan is 1-5 on the road against ranked teams under Jim Harbaugh. They go to Wisconsin this week. Under Harbaugh, they're 7-9 against ranked opponents in all games. So Harbaugh not delivering a very good record for Michigan against ranked opponents. And Auburn is going on the road against Texas A&M. A&M is ranked. Auburn has lost 4 of 5 road games against ranked opponents. Also, former Michigan receiver Braylon Edwards said Ohio State is light years ahead of Michigan. Thought that was interesting. Rick Pitino in Louisville, they have reached a settlement. It ends a 2-year legal battle. Pitino gets no money. He had sued for $40 million. And also, it is said that he resigned as opposed to being fired.
Yes. So he was seeking, as you mentioned, $40 million in the lawsuit. So they come to an agreement. He does not get another dollar from Louisville, but it will read that he quit as opposed to being fired. And I guess he's happy with that. Time to move on, as he said.
Yeah, well, it is time to move on. And you wonder about that lawsuit, about them dropping it. Here's the thing, too. And I remember when he filed it, I'm thinking, you wonder what people might say under oath. If you got a lawsuit and Louisville is defending itself, they're going to call people up there that might say some things about Pitino that are not very complimentary. And I'm not sure if you want to dredge up some of that stuff. So that might be one reason the parties decided to drop this thing. All right, Tennessee playing against Florida. They're going against a really good linebacker. His name is David Reese. He is from the state of Michigan. He is the Bronco Nagurski National Defensive Player of the Week for his performance against Kentucky. I knew he played well. Didn't realize he played this well. 16 tackles, 13 solo, and he made a stop on a 3rd-and-1 against Kentucky in that fourth quarter that allowed Florida to get the ball back. So David Reese, really good football player for the Gators. Tennessee has released its schedule for SEC games, and I really like what they're doing on Saturday home games. So they open SEC play Saturday, January the 4th, hosting defending SEC champion LSU. That is a noon tip. They also are going to host on Saturday South Carolina, January 11th, Kentucky, February 8th, Florida, February 29th, Auburn, March the 7th. That's a really attractive Saturday SEC home schedule. The other midweek home games are against Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Vanderbilt. Tennessee's 9 SEC road games at Missouri. I don't need to say at. They're road games. Missouri, Georgia, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Alabama, South Carolina, Auburn, Arkansas, Kentucky. And Tennessee enters the season riding the nation's longest active home winning streak, 26 in a row for Tennessee at Thompson Bowling Arena. And the popular Vol Pass is being offered again this season, and single-game tickets go on sale to the public beginning October the 8th. Tennessee plays 18 home games. They've got 8 Saturday games, and they've got 20 games at least in the state of Tennessee. That includes at least one in the SEC tournament, which is in Nashville. And the longest homestand for Tennessee is only 3 games from December 21 through January the 4th. That's Jacksonville State, Wisconsin, and LSU. And 8 of the Vols' 9 home SEC games will tip off at 7 p.m. or earlier. All right, so a couple of other notes out there. In the last 3 years, there's only one SEC team that has a winning record against the top 25. That's Alabama at 14-3. The rest of the league combined against the top 25, 38-118. That's amazing. 38-118 in Alabama's 14-3. I would say 2 of Alabama's losses were to Clemson. If I had to guess off the top of my head, I'm wondering if that other one might have been to Auburn. Not sure. But anyway, Alabama 14-3, best record. All right, Steph Curry, he's committed to playing for the USA in the Olympics. He's never been on an Olympic team. I wonder if part of that was due to injury. I'm not sure exactly what the situation was, but he's not been on the Olympic team. He's looking forward to that. In the NFL, the Texans have cut punter Trevor Daniel, a former Tennessee punter. Also, Detroit signing former Florida quarterback Jeff Driscoll. Pittsburgh promoting quarterback Devlin Hodges from the practice squad. The Colts putting quarterback Chad Kelly on the commissioner's permissions list. And it's interesting, he got suspended a while back. He was at a Halloween party when he was with Denver. It was put on by Von Miller. He got arrested for trespassing and entering another woman's home, suspended without pay the first two games, and the personal conduct policy. So, well, he had some issues. People knew about some of those issues, and hopefully he'll get things straightened out. Miami has been outscored 102-10 in its first two games. That's the third worst start in NFL history after two games. So now people are wondering, is Miami going to go 0-16? And also,
they've started the right way. If you're going to take a run at it, they've done everything to take the will to live away from their roster. They've traded away their best players two before the start of the season, one now since then, and so they're following the blueprint pretty nicely.
Well, Detroit and Cleveland would be the others that have gone 0-16.
Correct.
Miami, gosh, they're pretty bad.
Maybe they can pull Orlovsky out of the broadcast booth.
He might not want to play behind that line. Dallas is favored by 21 over Miami. New England by 21 over the Jets. That's the first time in 32 years that two NFL teams on the same weekend have been favored by at least 21 points. And, of course, the Giants are starting Daniel Jones. His jersey sales have increased by 500% after he was named the starter. And he's got the highest-selling jersey of any NFL player who's yet to start a game. Running back Melvin Gordon, Chargers, insists he'll play this year, and he said he doesn't want to have a waste of talent to sit out the season. Tough note out of Carter, a longtime assistant coach there who's been very valuable to that program. Clyde Moore Sr. passed away. He had been out there for over 20 years. He was with the middle school in 1995. He joined the high school in 98, coached a defensive line of which he called his group the Nasty Dogs. He was able to coach his son. He was coaching with his grandson, but he had complications from diabetes. So a sad day at Carter, the passing of Clyde Moore. All right, a couple of Major League Baseball notes. Mike Yastrzemski hit the first home run for a player named Yastrzemski since Carl did it 36 years ago. Carl is the grandfather of Mike. Mike plays for San Francisco. And by the way, Carl Yastrzemski, 237 home runs at Fenway Park. He also played more games than any other player at Fenway Park.
It was a really cool moment yesterday. They showed a picture of the two of them walking around on the outfield grass, and it's just a really neat moment. It was sad because Carl's son, Mike's father, passed away a couple of years ago following complications from a surgery. It's such a shame. He obviously wasn't on hand for such a cool moment, but for Carl and Mike to share that moment pregame and then Mike to go out and hammer that home run, really a cool day.
Yeah. And then Pudge Rodriguez's son was a relief pitch for San Francisco in that game. San Francisco ended up winning in 15 innings. Gavin Biggio hit for the cycle. His dad, Craig Biggio, hit for the cycle with the Astros. Gavin, who's with Toronto, that's the second father-son combination to ever hit for the cycle. And I thought, boy, that could be a good trivia question. Then I saw who the others were.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and it's like, nope, that's just going to be a neat footnote to say. And the other one was
Gary,
the Ward family.
Gary and Daryl Ward.
Right on the tip of my tongue. Somebody out there saying, I knew that!
So we passed on that one. All right, Pete Alonso, 48 home runs. That leads Major League Baseball. Those that have hit at least 45 this year, Alonso, Gino Suarez with 47, Mike Trout at 45, he's out for the year, Solar with Kansas City at 45, Bellinger and Yelich at 44. Yelich is out, but Bellinger has a chance to continue in that regard. Roberto Clemente Day. He was MVP in 66 and 71, World Series MVP, a 15-time All-Star. He had 12 gold gloves. He had 4 batting titles. And, of course, he was killed when he was, I guess you'd call it a mission trip, where he was taking goods to, was it Dominican Republic?
It was.
And on Christmas Day of 72, gosh, I remember when I heard that news, one of my favorite players, not on my favorite team, but one of my favorite players to watch. I just thought he was a brilliant, brilliant player. A couple of other notes. Caleb Wilson of CAK shoots a 65 at Three Ridges to win the district title for the second year in a row. He's a sophomore. He had 8 birdies and a bogey. CAK won by 14 shots. Berean Christian's Cooper Hay shot a 68, so he finished second as CAK gets that title. And the CAK girls won by 47. Allie Cooper shot a 78 to lead the way there. One other note, Justin Verlander goes to 19-6. Six innings, no runs. He's got a 250 earned run average since the All-Star break. His earned run average is 1.79. Alvarez hits his 26th home run. That's an Astros rookie record. The Astros are one win away from winning 100 games for the third year in a row, and the Yankees are one win away from also 100 wins. That would be back-to-back 100-win seasons for the Yankees for the first time in like 16 years. So
I think they're getting there.
Yeah. Obviously, yeah, they're going to get there. So anyway, those are our news and notes.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And as we shared with last week, certainly the condolences go out to the family of our friend Fred McLeod, who joined us a number of times on Sports Talk throughout the years. The Cleveland Cavaliers, as a lasting tribute to their television voice for the last 13 seasons, it was about to be his 14th year, they have dedicated the media space at what is now the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, as opposed to the Quicken Loans Arena. Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse will be dedicated as the Fred McLeod TV studio and media workroom. Mm. So nice of them to remember him that way. Yes. We'll get a break and be back. This is Sports Talk.
You ever notice how stations that promote less talk never actually say anything worth hearing in the first place? We talk sports all the time. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900. Let's talk to Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
You know, as the Kentucky field goal kicker set up for his potentially game-winning field goal against Florida Saturday night, I looked at my wife and I said, he ain't going to make that. This is Florida. And of course he didn't.
I think you need to stop talking to your wife during football games, Jim. I'm sure she might appreciate it greatly.
Beyond football games, John.
If she's anything like mine. Or at least anyway, talk about something else.
And so we know the history. He missed the field goal. And I got to thinking, you know, if you look at the, say, the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, it is uncanny if you take the number of brutal losses Tennessee has had against Florida and add that to the number of brutal losses Kentucky has had against Florida. They're not all Florida luck. I mean, you obviously have to be a good team to win a lot of close games. But where do you separate luck versus being good? If Florida was good when they stopped Kentucky on fourth down and they didn't, you know, make the fourth and one earlier in the game or made them go for the field goal on a, that's good play. But when you don't block the field goal, you are benefiting from pure good luck. When a guy misses a 35-yard field goal. You remember the long field goal Tennessee missed at the Swamp? It was like 50 yards.
Yeah.
Aaron Medley, 55. He hit it. He nailed it, too. He hit a really good kick. It just didn't hook.
Right.
It just missed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Some people thought it was good.
And do you remember the Kentucky? It was Kentucky in the Swamp when Florida got a playoff, scored a touchdown, but the clock was at zero.
Right.
Maybe technically that was okay, but they got the benefit of the call.
Well, change the rule.
That's right. And they also had a similar situation in Knoxville when it was the 10-9 game.
Yeah, sure did. Yeah.
They were able to benefit from a play that should have been blown dead, and it wasn't.
Was that the Trayvon game?
Yes.
Treyon Harris.
Yeah,
that's right. Treyon Harris. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He went to Tennessee State eventually.
Is that where he went?
Yeah.
Wow.
But your point is a good one. And if you're a program that is struggling to find itself in the position that it used to be, like Tennessee or what Kentucky's done in making a steady climb with Coach Stoops, you've got to make the absolute most of your opportunities, because you don't know that you're going to get another one. When you're a team that on an annual basis doesn't really have to worry about the talent that's on its roster, like Florida, you're going to get more opportunities than the team. See, Tennessee used to be in that position. Mm-hmm. Tennessee used to be in the position that, okay, if there was a turnover, like the six they had against Auburn in the SEC championship game, they were still going to have an opportunity to win that game, and they did. You look at a drive that doesn't go your way or a ball that bounces the other way. You know that there's going to be that opportunity to make good on that before the end of the game. Tennessee's not in that position anymore. It used to be that it would that Tennessee might go toe-to-toe with a South Carolina team that its starting 11 on both sides of the ball could give you a good game. But once the depth of Tennessee's roster took over, that's where the Vols would pull away in the third and fourth quarters, and that's why Tennessee consistently had the upper hand in the early days of that series. So I just think that Florida has remained consistent in the talent that's on its roster and its ability to overcome its own mistakes in so many instances, like the heartbreak losses for Kentucky and Tennessee that you're citing, because the Gators are just simply in that position and have remained in that position, whereas Tennessee now, the door only opens for a few seconds in instances where you are a definite underdog, and if you don't convert, you're not going to get that shot again.
What I think is interesting, and this is not scientific by any means, this is just a perception on my part. So I started covering Tennessee in 1985, and I'd say from 85 to 2008, Tennessee didn't have a whole lot of heartbreak losses. They found a way to win a lot of games.
Yes.
You can take 98, for example, and you can find three of them, or maybe four.
Yep.
All right. But since then, if you go through 2008 forward, Tennessee's lost a lot of heartbreak games. It just seems like the better you are, maybe the more breaks you get.
Yeah.
Alabama gets a lot of breaks, right?
You get more opportunities to create those breaks.
And, but you watch Alabama and you see, there was an interception by LSU, and they said, no, his foot was out of bounds. You see the replay, it wasn't, but they didn't have replay at that time to overturn it. There are a lot of things like that. So it seems like the better you are, the more breaks you get, and the worse you are, the fewer breaks you get.
Yeah, just go back.
It seems like.
Yeah, Bruce Pearl, when he was the coach at Tennessee, he didn't mind what would happen. He didn't mind how many missed threes would take place in a ball game, because the way they did full court pressure, they were going to create more opportunities to score points to make up for any misses on cold nights. And for the most part, that was the case. Now, that style of play also led to a couple of games where you had significant leads that you weren't able to protect because you weren't able to create those same opportunities with your defense when you didn't convert on offense. Ohio State is one, and I think there was at least another 21-point lead that dissipated, and they lost that particular game. So, you know, I just think that the opportunities usually are created by the talent you have on offense and defense, whether it be a takeaway, something along those lines, or a giveaway from the other side.
And think about this. The only time Tennessee has beaten Florida in the last 14 games, Tennessee trailed 21-0.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange. Well, all those are really, really good points. I think the thing I've learned, John, is that from now on in these crucial situations, I'm not going to look at my wife, nor am I going to utter a word.
If it helps, just go ahead and get some duct tape and keep that right next to the recliner.
And does your wife have a straitjacket?
Yeah.
There you go. Guys, good to talk to you. Have a good afternoon.
You too, Jim. Thank you very much. 656-9900, 656-9900. Couple of things that we didn't get to yesterday. Wanted to say congratulations to John, as he was the qualifier yesterday for our Coors Light Man Cave Makeover. So you'll have another opportunity. Listen for the cue to call between now and the end of the program. And when you get that opportunity, you could be the next qualifier for the grand prize, which will be a big screen television, two recliners, and a great mini fridge. It's the Coors Light Man Cave Makeover. And then yesterday, we ran out of time. It was poor clock management on my part, but we say congratulations to Jason Ewing and to Mary Ann Bishop, who were our two qualifiers that go into the running for the Ultimate Tailgate Camper. We will give away the grand prize a week from Saturday, but yesterday, congratulations to the Tailgate Camper qualifiers, Jason Ewing and Mary Ann Bishop, as well as our Coors Light Man Cave Makeover qualifier, John. You'll get another opportunity to qualify for the Coors Light Man Cave Makeover later in today's program. This is Sports Talk. Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
Let's hear now from Juwan Jennings, Tennessee senior wide receiver, off to a good start this year. And he looking forward to going to Florida, he said, as he met with the media earlier this week. Here comments from Jennings.
Are you excited about going to Florida?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Definitely excited. It's been a minute since I've been in the swamp. You know, just to go back brings a whole lot of memories back, and I just can't wait to go compete.
This has always been a big rival game. How do you see it now?
It's always a big game. Anytime we go play Florida, it's a big game, period. It's our first SEC game of the year. So, you know, everybody, both sides going to be fired up. Just can't wait to go out and show what we can do.
Do you carry momentum from Chattanooga into this? I know Chattanooga wasn't a great opponent, but you did some good things.
Oh, yeah, we definitely do. We did good as an offense and defense. You know, we went out there and created some plays on both sides of the ball. We're definitely going to carry that over for this week and just to take that in from take practice, you know, to the game field.
How would you assess your play so far this season?
I made a few plays, but, you know, only I just want to get better each week as the games go. And like I said, BYU week, you know, that was the round two. This is round four, and I'm just coming out to do as best as I can, best of my ability.
Coach Pruitt said that he likes the way games go. That kind of shows where, you know, you are as a team. You feel the same way? Do you kind of like going on the road to hostile environments?
I love any game, period. Y'all know me by now. I'm just a competitive kid. But definitely to go in the swamp this year, you know, to hopefully win. I cannot wait. Definitely cannot wait. And that's going to be a big testimony to this team, what we can accomplish.
What
do
you see from Florida on film, especially in the defensive backfield?
What I see in the film, I see a group of guys that they can cover. Just going to go out there and rely on our own abilities and what we can do as an offense.
How did y'all sense Jarrett was responding after the first couple games when he struggled? Do you see any difference in him this week coming off the performance he had Saturday?
He definitely bounced back, and he's ready to go. You know, JG, I tell him every time, you know, he's the leader of this team. We need him, and he's been vocalizing his leadership on this team, and he's ready to play, and I tell him all the time, I got his back, and he got mine, so we had no worries there.
Jawan, as an upperclassman, you got a lot of guys going to the swamp as freshmen, playing for the first time, you know, not only in the swamp but in an SEC game. What should be the message, you know, that you're going to give them before?
It's always the same message. You know, you got to prepare to win. And this week, that's all we're going to be doing. We're going to prepare our asses off this whole week and come out there Saturday ready to execute.
Do you think it's a good thing that some of those young guys don't have the battle scars from the last few years playing teams like Florida and losing late and can just go out there and play free?
I think it'll help. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. You know, when it comes down to this game, it's all about execution. And like I said, you got to come out there and prepare, whether you're a freshman or you're a fifth-year senior. The deal breaker is coming out and preparing for this game is what's going to matter the most.
How happy were you for Tyler Byrd? Here's a guy that probably hadn't caught as many passes in his career as he would like, but on special teams, he's played very well, gets a block punt. How happy were you for him?
So happy. And I'm always happy any of my guys, you know, go out there and make a play. Tyler Byrd, he busts his tail every day at practice, you know, special teams. And last year he caught a touchdown against Alabama, and I was ecstatic then. You know, that's my dog. We basically, you know, kind of grew up together, man. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, this is basically my home here now. I live here for 5 years going on now, and just to see, you know, any one of my guys come out and make a play, it turns me up and it fills my heart with love.
What would that mean to you?
It would mean a lot, you know. It'd be the first SEC like game of the year, you know, first SEC win, and basically, you know, like I said, it's round four, and I'm ready to kick it off.
You're in a stretch now, three top 10 teams in these next four games. You've been through these kind of stretches before earlier in your career. What's the secret of kind of getting through it and not wearing down and kind of being able to survive that kind of struggle?
Secret, one play at a time, literally. You go out there and you focus on that one play and only that play at a time, and you just collectively bring it together. And, you know, you bring collectively a bunch of good plays together. And then once you do that, you know, you look at the end of the game and you can say that you give your all or not. And then, you know, you go from there.
Florida's got a pretty good pass rush. What can this offense do to kind of neutralize and keep that pass rush in check?
We're just going to, you know, like I said, we're going to prepare. We got an offensive line that can handle that, so I'm not really worried about their pass rush. You know, they have a great team, and we have a great team as well.
Juwan,
Juwan, last time we talked to you, you talked about kind of the lack of energy on the sideline and how that was going to be something that you were going to harp on moving forward. How is the energy going into this week in the Swamp?
It's going to be crazy, you know. We're going to have lots of energy, you know. We've been having lots of energy since that last game. I told you we're going to come out with lots of energy. And this whole team just ready. We're fired up. Like I said, it's a road game going into Swamp, Florida. How else can you put it? Like, it's an SEC game. We're going to go out there and give our all, and that's all that matters.
How much pride do you take? I know you're a guy who tries to compete every day, every rep, every game. But how much pride do you take in being a guy who kind of produces in big games?
Well, I take a lot of pride in that, you know, as being, you know, a go-to guy. Whenever you need me, I just always want to be there for you. And so, I mean, it's a lot of pride in that. But I'm not just worried about me. We got a lot of guys on this team that can make plays. So I know at the end of the day, you know, you throw the ball to Marquez, you throw the ball to me, you throw the ball to Palmer. I know as a receiver group, we're going to come down with it.
What's your fondest memory against Florida?
My fondest memory against Florida, I guess I had to say just winning, you know, just winning against them. I mean, but I don't really got no fondest memories, you know, not any that I'm sure that you don't know about, but I'm just ready to go out there and ball this Saturday. That's it.
Have you shared, Coach Shaney, the film of you throwing a touchdown pass down there? Years ago?
Nah, I ain't, you know, like I said, I'm actually going to go see the game plan today at 2 o'clock, so I can't wait to see it.
Last one. Just where do you think you guys made the most progress on offense from game one to now?
Definitely just execution, and then just come out there and playing with energy. This whole team is just ready to go. We've been locked in, you know, the first two games didn't go how we liked it. We came back this last weekend, bounced back, and we're just going to carry that over to this weekend.
That is Tennessee wide receiver Juwan Jennings, and I can remember back in 2016, John, he beat Tez Tabor for a long touchdown pass as Tennessee rallied from a 21-0 deficit to win that game. He also threw that 67-yard touchdown pass to, 58-yard touchdown pass to Josh Dobbs in Gainesville in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
On a throwback pass. So he's had some nice moments against the Gators.
He sure has, and there was just – I'm sure the stadium was rocking like perhaps you hadn't felt since maybe the 98 game when he did leave Tabor in his dust.
Yes.
Just for the yapping that had gone on from that direction this way. And as you pointed out, it looked like it was another game that was just going to follow the same disappointing script where Florida jumps out to a big lead, but Tennessee came storming back and went on to win convincingly. That was such a fantastic afternoon. It'd be awesome to see them kind of pull that off and be in a position like they have been their last two trips in 17 and 15 to this time finish the drill.
I know some people don't believe in momentum, but how could you deny the momentum Tennessee had when they rallied from 21-0 down? When
right.
They started to score and then ended up taking the lead, there was just no question they were pulling away from Florida and would win that football game. Of course, I believe a lot in momentum, and I think the momentum of when Tennessee started to rally, that was the tidal wave that Florida could not stop.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk.
The runaway number one in East Tennessee for sports. We are 99.1, the sports animal.
A final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson.
I want to bring an interesting comment from Jared Garantano. So T. Martin had talked about Garantano trying to get on the same page with Jim Chaney and how he's had a bunch of different coordinators during his time here. So he asked Garantano about that.
Jared, T. Martin was at the quarterback club yesterday, and he talked about you having three different coordinators in 3 years, and now sometimes the terminology can be challenging. Do you feel like you and Coach Tanya are on the same page with all that right now?
Yeah, every single week there's a different game plan. There's a new words, new terminology going in. So it's a whole different season every week for me, and I have to get accustomed to what he's thinking and how he's also calling plays. So, I mean, it's going to take some time, but I think that last week was a good start to that.
How do you feel like that game will help you going toward Florida?
A lot. I mean, we were having different meetings last week. We kind of had a different setup, and going through the meetings and going through different things with him, it actually helped me last week.
That's Garantano. And, John, I think that the more Garantano works with Chaney, the more Chaney is seeing what Garantano can do in game conditions, I think the better they'll be. And I would expect Garantano to improve as the season goes. Didn't get off to a great start, but I think he's got too much ability, and I think you'll see a better version of him as the season goes.
Well, you would like to think so, simply for the fact that's been the track record for Jim Chaney where he's been. He's been able to take quarterbacks that have found themselves battling some difficulty, some of that at their own making, and been able to help them iron out some of those wrinkles in their game. And for Tennessee, that would be the best-case scenario, is that Garantano perhaps live up to the expectation that many had for him in being a breakout-type player this year after such a sound and solid season last year.
Well, Tennessee has to do a lot of things right to beat Florida at Florida, but at the top of that list, they've got to have Garantano playing well.
That they do. That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Up next, normally on a Wednesday, it's Mike Keith. Mike will not be with us today. He'll join us tomorrow on game day for the Titans in Jacksonville. Up next, our friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle joins us on Sports Talk.